So, Geoffrey Robertson QC,
thank you very much for talking with us. I guess the first question I'd have to ask is, I know that QC stands for Queen's Counsel. There must be some kind of history to that title, mustn't there?
Yes, I mean, originally, back in the 15th, 16th century, yeah. The most senior advocates were called sergeants. So when you became a sergeant,
yes.
You got, as when you become a QC, you got to double your fees.
And that's kind of handy, isn't it?
So that was the honorific. And at some stage after the return of Charles II in 1660, at some stage, sergeant was dropped in favour of KC, which was King's Council, which of course became QC in the reign of our beloved Queen. So I have from her in 1988, I have a parchment which has her seal and is Morocco bound. It cost me a few hundred quid. It's the way the Lord Chancellor's department makes money.
Money.
I think it costs a fortune these days. But she describes me as her trusty and well beloved.
Oh well, in which
so
case,
that's very
well,
nice.
We can't argue with that, can we?
To hang on the wall, even though I've acted against her children from time to time, and against Diana and others, but the inscription QC, which is so familiar to us because we've had a queen for so long, she's so long-lived,
absolutely,
will change when she goes, passes, or retires. Perhaps she should do a pope and retire. Then we will have King Charles III,
and
I will automatically, seamlessly become a KC.
And you won't be able to see the join.
No, but all the papers, you often see QC. That will all change to KC automatically.
So when did you first start thinking that you wanted to be a lawyer?
Ah, well, that was when I read Charles Dickens' Great Expectations.
Really?
Yes. I was enraptured by this character, who's not a very nice character, and no one else likes him very much, Mr. Jaggers.
Oh, yes.
Rather sinister figure, who nonetheless saves the lives of wretches at the Old Bailey, those wretches who can afford his fees.
Of course.
And he is the mainspring of the plot, and he enters in a scene where he's at a pub and all the customers are talking, assuming the guilt of some fellow who's been arrested. And he points out to them brilliantly the presumption of innocence and how they mustn't believe what they read in newspapers.
Yes.
That was
so
back
that was
in the mid-19th century. But I did like Mr. Jaggers. I never had a lawyer in the family.
No.
And he was the first lawyer I met.
Ever come across?
The imagination of Charles Dickens.
Yes.
He used to
live
next door
to
us in Doughty Street.
Yes.
And so, and then, oddly enough, I was seduced by another book, which had been banned in Australia, where I grew up, after the acquittal of Lady Chatterley, Old Bailey.
Yes.
We had a stupid reactionary prime minister called Sir Robert Menzies, who was an Anglophile, and everyone assumed that the book would be available after it was available in England. But he read it, and he said, "I'm not going to allow my wife to read this book," and so we banned it. And Australians didn't care much about servants, but wives had to be protected.
Yeah, of course.
And Stu, because he was so powerful, they banned The Trial of Lady Chatterley, which was a Penguin special.
That's right.
With the transcript.
Yes.
And I got hold of a Samizdat copy of The Trial of Lady Chatterley. And I was, of course, I was 16, I was out for anything to do with sex, but it wasn't the four-letter words that turned me on, it was the tactics of the book's defenders, Gerald Gardner and Jeremy Hutchinson.
Yes.
And so
yes.
that was when, at 16, I conceived the idea of becoming a lawyer. QC at the Old Bailey. And it was a great delight later on to actually meet Gerald Gardner,
yes,
who was retired but still active in mind, and he was supported us in Spycatcher, the great Spycatcher case against Margaret Thatcher, and to work with Jeremy Hutchinson, who was still at the bar. So that in a sort of outer Sydney suburb, that was when I realised what I wanted to do in life.
Yes, I was just thinking, of course, having read through some of your early history, you were involved with the Oz Trial as well, weren't you?
Yes. That was a satirical magazine which started in Sydney, and I used to write bits and pieces for it, and then by the time I got to Oxford on a Rhodes Scholarship, one of the editors, Richard Neville, was in deep trouble, being prosecuted for conspiracy to corrupt public morals. It was all a fraud, because at this time in 1970 the Scotland Yard was thoroughly corrupt, and its obscene publication squad, and called it the Dirty Squad, were in fact being bribed by the Soho booksellers to allow pornography to be sold in Soho. But they had to pretend, because there were people like Mary Whitehouse and Lord Longford demanding an end, more action. So they started on the underground press, which of course didn't have the money to bribe them.
Soft target.
So that aroused my anger at censorship, and I worked on the Oz Trial with John Mortimer.
Yes.
He became a dear friend, forensic father. In fact, he taught me the art of cross-examination is not to examine crossly,
and
how to charm witnesses rather than berate them.
Yeah. Yes, like Rumpole.
Yes. He did. I picked up
quite a few things.
A few Rumpolean manners, but I could never be Rumpole. I'm never very lovable.
Yes, he was a kind of lovable rascal, wasn't he?
Yes.
And I was thinking, actually, in connection with the Oz Trial, the late Felix Dennis, he was spoken of by the judge, wasn't he, as someone who...
We had this mad judge called Argyle, who sentenced Richard to not only 18 months imprisonment, but deportation, you know, back to Botany Bay.
Yeah.
And he was Anna Wintour, young, wearing Primark, not Prada, was his girlfriend or a girlfriend, and offered to marry him to save him from deportation. So for the benefit of Vogue, we got him out. But and then there was another guy, editor, who got 12 months.
Yes.
And then he came to Felix, and he said, because you are very much stupider than the others, I'll give you only 9 months.
Yes, yes.
So Felix, I think that spurred him to become one of the richest men in the country.
Absolutely. And he
to donate his millions to planting trees.
Absolutely, at, in Dorsington, which is near where I live.
So Stratford-on-Avon and other parts of the country will be regenerated.
By Felix Dennis. By the late Felix Dennis, of course.
The late Felix Dennis, stupid conspirator to corrupt public morals.
Yes. I think all of his magazines, technically, they were kind of technical mags, weren't they? Like computer magazines.
A lot of them were. It got into computing magazines.
And stuff, didn't it? Like that, yes. And This Week, I think. Was it The Week?
Yes,
he
founded The Week.
He founded The Week, didn't he?
No, he was useful member of society.
Yes, indeed. So then moving on, you've been involved in quite a lot of high-level cases one way or another, haven't you? I just wondered about your work, particularly with human rights. I mean, that's an international issue, isn't it?
Yeah, I worked, I suppose, my trajectory was after Rupert the Bear with his very bear-like erection that was the cause of the Oz trial.
Yes.
We then, I grubbed around the criminal bar and did some cases in the 70s that are still talked about today, the gay news, blasphemy trial, and the ABC case and so on, the Romans in Britain, prosecution of the National Theatre.
Yes.
And then when I became a QC, I did a lot of murder cases and the Diana Jim Photos case and the Iraqgate case and various cases that were big in the 90s and led to the overthrow of, or led to John Major's demise, the Tory sleaze cases.
Yes.
And then after I became a Silk, a QC, I was eligible to appear in the courts of most of the Commonwealth.
Right.
So I went out to cross-examine Lee Kuan Yew and to defend the walls. I had a retainer from the Wall Street Journal, and I went around the world defending Wall Street journalists who were prosecuted or sued for libel. And so that was yet another development, which is what I'm doing today.
Yeah.
But there were, I suppose, the human rights thing started with appeals to the Privy Council. And Privy Council is a very curious court. It used to sit just in Downing Street, great big room, and it was the final court for the Commonwealth. For the empire, actually, when Britain had an empire.
It hasn't got much of one now, has it?
No, but it's got a few countries, and there are a lot of countries quite established, like Mauritius and Jamaica and Trinidad. They still have the Privy Council as their final appeal, and it's usually five of the law lords who otherwise sit in the Supreme Court. And in the, I suppose, beginning in the 70s with Michael X, I had a death row practice.
Did you?
And I would appear for men whose last chance of life, because they'd been sentenced to death, was the Privy Council. And it was a Tuesday morning. You had to turn up and convince five sceptical law lords that the trial had miscarried. And sometimes you did. I had a big win on identification evidence, for example, which was being misused. But the big case was the Michael X case, where he was a 60s Black Power character, Michael De Freitas, and he went back to Trinidad, ended up convicted of murder, and I went to see him on death row, and I'd never been. It was the first death row experience, and I sat with him there for several days. And there were 30 other people all behind a monkey cage. They were really in monkey cages with a mattress and a slop bucket and temperatures of 90 degrees, and people were screaming. They only got out 1 hour a day, and it was a nightmare. It was mental torture. And of course, the constitution in these places, we'd given them, bestowed a constitution on them, and it always protected the death sentence, and they carried it out just like the British had. And with their death row, and I said to Michael, you know, this place is really a place of torture. Why don't we, because the Constitution also banned torture. So why don't we say that a long, lengthy period on death row amounts to torture, and the sentence has to be commuted? I never forget, he put his fingers to his lips. He said, listen, just listen. And you could have heard a pin drop. All those men were straining against the bars of their monkey cages to listen. And he said, for them, you represent hope, and you must make this argument. Not for me, because they'll kill me in any event, which they did. And I have to say that I made him that promise, and 20 years later, in a Privy Council case against Jamaica, the Law Lords accepted that a prolonged stay on death row was torture and amounted, required commutation of the death penalty. And my Chambers members from Doughty Street, which is my chambers I founded in 1990, have gone around the Commonwealth getting that principle accepted.
Yes.
Even in Zimbabwe, under Robert Mugabe, you couldn't be hanged if you had a prolonged stay on death row. So it saved a lot of lives.
I suppose it must be difficult not to get emotionally involved with cases of that sort.
Well, that's a trap for the unwary. Barristers have to retain a sense of objectivity. If you get too involved, something else John Mortimer taught me when I lost my first client to prison, and he struck a savage judge. He shouldn't have gone to prison. It was barbaric to send him to prison. But of course, that's the luck of the draw. And I was extremely upset. I was 25 or 26. I met John at the theatre that night. And he read me a lecture about not getting too involved in the fate which sometimes, like the luck of the draw and getting a savage judge, you couldn't alter.
No. Yes, I remember speaking to a young barrister lawyer who was involved with all the legal aid work, and I said, I've always wanted to ask this question of a lawyer. How do you defend someone who you know is guilty? And quick as a flash, he said, well, how do you know that they are?
Well, sometimes you've got a pretty good idea. If they confess, of course, you can't defend them.
No,
you say, I'll do a great mitigation speech, or off you go.
Think of his mother and his father. And stuff.
But sometimes, you know, I had a guy, he was a company director of a machine tool company in Coventry, and accused of making false declarations on customs forms, which got weapons-making equipment to Saddam Hussein. Just before it was during the Gulf War, and which had killed British soldiers. So I remember the prosecution papers came in. It was clear as daylight. He was guilty as hell.
Yeah.
And I said to him when he came to see me, how can you plead not guilty?
Yeah.
And he said, well, actually, one of Mrs. Thatcher's cabinet ministers told me how to fill out the form, and I reported every time I came back from Iraq, I reported to MI6. Well, he had a defense, but there was no sign of it in the prosecution papers.
No.
And Alan Clark had actually made a statement denying it. So we embarked on a discovery demand. And these wretched ministers, Ken Clark, Malcolm Rifkin, themselves QCs, signed what are called public interest immunity certificates to stop us getting evidence that would have freed my client and to ensure that he was convicted and could have gone to jail for 7 years. That was how outrageous it was. And eventually we got some documents and they confessed that yes, he did report to MI6. I had to cross-examine Alan Clark, who after 50 minutes of cross-examination, finally admitted. I said he wouldn't admit that he was economical with the truth, which was what the cabinet secretary had admitted in the spycatcher case. He was too much of a snob for that. He said I was economic with the actuality.
Oh, right. That's a smart word, isn't it?
Yes.
The actuality.
Yes, a smart phrase for lied.
Yes, that's what I like talking about, collateral damage, isn't it? You know, in sort of like military terms.
That's right.
People have still died. So in the, you know, your life is full of all these legal argumentations and so forth, which must be over the years, I suppose, be well rehearsed in your own mind anyway when you take on a case. How do you keep yourself relaxed when you're not legalising.
Oh, I don't. I'm never relaxed.
Oh, you're not?
No.
No.
I seem to thrive on stress. I've never had a stress-related illness.
Have you not?
No.
No.
No. Other than a fight with a girlfriend, I think.
that's common to all of us.
Yes, that's right.
I suspect. So do you have interest in music or anything of that sort, or does that just...
I have a very expensive passion for opera.
Oh, do you?
Which is, I think, that and airline tickets are my main expenses.
Yes. Air miles are probably building up quite nicely.
Well, I've built up an awful lot of air miles, and I've built up a lot of hotel points.
Yes.
But you cannot.
Yet,
build up points at Covent Garden for regular. You really should. You have to persuade it.
I'll
have to suggest to Glyndebourne at least, or to Covent Garden, that they should encourage people by giving them points, particularly for sitting in the top seats, which cost £200 or so.
Yes. I think as well, thinking of kind of the law and current cases, I see that... there's a big news item on BBC this morning about the Catholic Church in the US.
I wrote a book about that. 10 years ago, it seems quite prescient. The case of the Pope, which was really about the last Pope, who I think was morally responsible for turning a blind eye to this enormous problem of paedophilia.
Yes.
And not just paedophiles, no. There are... a lot of very weak and disturbed people in the clergy, not only in the clergy, and given power, enormous power. I mean, kids are brought up to believe that they're God, or at least God's agent, and at the age of 7, they are inducted into the faith. They go to confession, where a lot of the abuse happens, and... I don't think it will ever be eradicated until the age of communion and the age of confession is
raised
till about 13 or 14, as it is in the Jewish faith, as in the Church of England. I think that is the key problem, and it's not one that the Catholic Church could bear to face. The Jesuits always say, give me the boy at 7.
Yes.
And they're addicted to that. They're given the boy at 7 and they abuse him.
Yes, not good at all. And then you have all these other kind of events. I was thinking of this terrible bridge collapse in Italy. And I think, is it the Prime Minister or the Interior Minister has kind of said he's going to get to the bottom of it and see who's responsible, you know, for the structure and stuff like that.
Well, we have Grenfell Tower. It's,
of course,
it's all an expensive exercise in hindsight, and one just hopes that lessons are learned. But that's a phrase that trips off the tongue of politicians, and the feeling is that rarely do they learn lessons, or if they do, they're forgotten.
Yes, very quickly.
You know, I'm now at an age where I can remember teaching those lessons when I was 30 or 40.
Yes.
And they're forgotten.
Yes. We don't learn from history, do we?
No.
So when you look back over your career, and I'm sure there's still some left, what would you be particularly pleased with for yourself?
Oh, I don't know. Things are... The one thing that has... Or one of the cases that has... stayed is the commutation of death sentences. I suppose was a great victory. There are other cases like the post-traumatic stress disorder case, which enabled women who killed their abusive partners to be freed, or at least convicted of manslaughter rather than murder. There have been quite a few groundbreaking cases to that extent that I look back with some, I suppose, enough satisfaction to put them in a memoir.
Yes. And is there anything...
But I wouldn't, I wouldn't say that otherwise there's been anything... I made a few suggestions. I think I was the first really to mount a comprehensive attack on the Catholic Church for its putting children at risk. There I wrote a bit, I've done a bit of history writing on the
And you've done television work as well, haven't you, with your hypotheticals?
Yes, that's right.
Yes. it's always some exterior noises, isn't there? Yeah, noises off, yes. And is there anything that you yet want to do legally?
Legally, that's a good question. I do have a number of cases at the moment, as far flung as Kuwait and even extending to Norfolk Island, which I'm representing. It's become an offence in Norfolk Island to sing God Save the Queen.
Oh, is it?
Because it's been taken over by Australia and they don't like it.
Ah, right.
So there are cases like that. I'm active in various dealing with the fallout from massacres and human rights incidents and so forth.
Yes,
and
that can't be pleasant to
come. But I'm giving lectures on rights of this, that and the other thing. So
yes.
I'm still
active.
I'm still unduly active, yes. And I founded Doughty Street Chambers in 1990, and I was the only QC with 20 others, and we now have 35 QCs, 13 of them women, and 100, over 100 barristers, half of whom are women. So we have, and we win diversity awards and that sort of thing, so I can look back with some pleasure in having made some changes to the bar and set up a large and, touch wood, because legal aid these days ain't what it used to be, and in fact it's some of my younger members are finding that they spend more money on expenses and getting the train to outlying courts than they're paid for doing the case. But it's very easy to demand more money for nurses, but the cry of more money for lawyers doesn't go down so well.
No,
it is necessary to provide access to justice.
Sure.
And it's worrying that the government has let the legal aid system slip into such a state.
Yes, that's unfortunate, isn't it, for those who can't afford. They might represent themselves, I suppose, if they have the...
Well, that's the problem. The judges are complaining now that so many people are being forced to represent themselves, and they get in such a tangle that in the end the judges, in effect, are acting for them.
Yes, so, yes. I mean, I can imagine people defending themselves saying, "Objection, Your Honour," and all that sort of stuff, because they've watched Perry Mason.
Yes.
Which, so there we are. But you must have a concern for people as well. I mean, that's got to be part of it, hasn't it? It's not just learning law and legal procedure or legal technicalities. It's got to be
I think if you're going to do certain areas of law, human rights, criminal law and so forth, you do need some fundamental philosophy about the importance of humanity,
It's a pity we need law, really, isn't it?
Well, Marx always hoped that law would wither away. It shows no sign of doing so.
No. I think I came across a quote. Here we are. Howard Zinn, Voices of a People's History of the United States. He said, "It's a strange thing. We think that law brings order. Law doesn't. How do we know that law does not bring order? Look around us. We live under the rule of law. Notice how much order we have."
The rule of law in America sometimes is the rule of lawyers.
Yes.
I'm afraid they have more lawyers per head than any other country. But I admire in some ways. I've worked a lot with American lawyers. They have a constitution.
We don't,
follow
do we?
It. We don't. And that enables a lot of fudges.
Yes, yes.
I think principle. course, yeah. The Americans believe in, and that's a good thing.
Yes, if Charles Dickens was still alive today, he would probably have a lot to say about it.
Well,
wouldn't he?
In a way, in Britain, we're fortunate.
Yeah.
We have a jury system. Yeah. We have a lot of fairness. Maybe it's because we play cricket, but it's
we have a
greater measure of fairness than many countries that I appear in. And sometimes I've just been in Brazil a lot recently acting for Lula, who has been framed and ordered to get him out of the election. And it's made me realise that we are lucky in our law, although we may not think so, and although we do have miscarriages of justice, but we care about them, and to some extent they can be more easily rectified in this country than elsewhere.
Than anywhere else.
So I don't despair, and often my sense of justice takes me to countries other than Britain, because here you do, on the whole, get a fair crack of the whip.
Yes, yes. Well, if I need you.
I'm still available.
You're still available, yes. Geoffrey Robertson, QC, thank you very much indeed.
And
thank you.
Thanks, Peter.
Thank you. Let's just finish this off. Oh, wait, half an hour.
Yep.
31 minutes. I must take a photograph of us if you don't mind.
Of course.